Public health officials warn of swimmer's itch at a local pond, and two Haines residents are sentenced for wildlife violations. It's a KHNS Local News. I'm Margaret Friednauer. Those stories and more up next. Public health officials are warning the Haines community that a parasite is affecting several people who reported swimming at a pond at the Porcupine Creek Crossing Bridge between 25 and 26 miles Haines Highway. Public health nurse Ty Esposito said the parasite causes a condition commonly known as swimmer's itch. According to the Centers for Disease Control, it appears as a skin rash and is caused by an allergic reaction to a certain parasite. The parasite is commonly found in ponds, especially during warmer months, and if birds also frequent the pond. The microscopic parasites that cause swimmer's itch are released from infected snails into fresh and salt water. While the parasites prefer to attach to a bird or mammal, if it comes in contact with a swimmer, it will burrow into the skin, causing a reaction and rash in some people. Symptoms include an itchy rash of tiny red spots. The itching may increase after a few hours, and the red spots may enlarge. The CDC says toweling off immediately after leaving the water may help prevent the parasites from attaching or burrowing under the skin. Antihistamines or mild corticosteroid cream can help relieve the itching also. Cold compresses, baking soda, or colloidal oatmeal baths can also help relieve itching. Esposito says she plans to post warnings at the pond soon. A Haines man was sentenced recently for shooting a brown bear from a boat in Lutac Inlet. The incident occurred on May 20th when Alaska State Wildlife Troopers contacted the 33-year-old man at the Lutac boat ramp. Troopers said the man shot a brown bear from his skiff and approximately 100 yards from where the bear was standing on shore. When troopers approached the man, he failed to validate his brown bear harvest ticket. He pleaded guilty in court last week and was ordered to pay a total of $1,950 in fines and restitution. He was also ordered to forfeit the rifle he used in the shooting. Other charges were dismissed as part of a plea agreement with the state. Another Haines man was sentenced on August 8th for poaching a pregnant cow moose. The case originated in late April when Alaska wildlife troopers received a report of a dead moose lying under a tarp at 38 Mile Haines Highway. Troopers said three men shot the moose, which was pregnant with twin calves. Only 20 pounds of meat was salvaged and the rest spoiled. The carcass was dumped on the side of the road. Troopers filed charges against the 33-year-old Haines man and two other men who had since fled the state. Charges are pending for those men in another state. The Haines man was sentenced to 10 days in jail, a $3,000 fine, his hunting license revoked for 3 years, 3 years probation, and forfeiture of his weapons. He is also required to write a letter of apology to the Haines community through the Chilkat Valley News. Schools in Haines, Skagway, and Klukwan are gearing up to start this year, or already have. Classes began in Skagway last Wednesday. The school this year has a total of 75 students that begin the school year. Superintendent Dr. Jeffrey Thielbar mentioned there is a bubble of 41 elementary students in grades kindergarten through 5, but only 15 students in the high school grades. Haines School opened on Tuesday. There wasn't an official count of students available Tuesday. But last week at a school board meeting, Haines School Superintendent Michael Byer said 283 students had registered, although that number has likely changed since then. 10 students were registered for the Mosquito Lake School. Classes at Klukwan School begin next Tuesday. The state also announced in early August that all three schools met adequate yearly progress, the accountability standards used under the federal No Child Left Behind Act. Did you know the United States Army and Stikeen Tlingits fought a battle in Wrangell almost 150 years ago? If you didn't, you're not alone. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports on an effort to find out more about the clash.
Tis Peterman has lived in Wrangell all of her life, but until a few years ago, she'd never heard of the 1869 Battle of Wrangell.
I happened to come across it when I did some research for the museum that was built here.
Peterman works for the Wrangell Cooperative Association, the Southeast Communities tribal government.
And it was just this buried little story. And I hadn't heard from anybody else on it. And when I looked further, it was just an interesting piece of Wrangell's history that I'd never heard about before.
That could change. The Cooperative Association and the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute are combining efforts to research the conflict and somehow commemorate the event. A $32,000 grant from the National Park Service's American Battlefield Protection Program is funding the effort.
The objective of the project is not only to understand the battle, but to understand where it occurred.
Zachary Jones is archivist and collection manager for the Heritage Institute, the cultural arm of Southeast's Regional Native Corporation. He says the research could allow for improvements to the site.
Development could include naming it a national battlefield, development of the area for tourism, or just telling the story, or perhaps even a memorial.
Jones says most of what's known comes from a military report to Congress. That document says the conflict began at a gathering on Christmas night, 1869. One version says a Stickeen Tlingit man bit a finger off a white woman who was part of the Army presence at Fort Wrangell.
The conflict originated over a domestic dispute, which then escalated into a military mobilization.
That led to the death of two Stickeen men and a white man. The military also bombarded the village.
It was largely a two-day conflict, which involved cannon fire from the U.S. Army and small arms fire exchanges between the Tlingit and the Army.
The battle caught the attention of officials in Washington, D.C. There were hearings before Congress, and the Army did not come out well.
This event happened during a period in American federal Indian policy where the federal government was trying to tone down violence, trying to stop the so-called Indian Wars. So a very critical report was developed by a federal official about the conflict that condemned the actions of the U.S. Army. And this action contributed to a military drawdown in Alaska.
The Army also shelled the Tlingit village in Cake and other locations in 1869, not long after the U.S. took over Alaska from Russia. Jones says they were not coordinated attacks, but had similar origins.
The Army was here trying to stamp out any aspects of Tlingit sovereignty. They used tactics of brutality that were very common during the Indian Wars period.
Other regional battles included the Navy's bombardment of Angoon about 10 years later. The grant award was announced earlier this month. Peterman of the Wrangell Cooperative Association hopes it expands knowledge of the conflict.
I think this research from this particular grant will find out if there's anybody that has passed down this story at all.
She also hopes the information gathered will better balance the written record. I'm Ed Schoenfeld reporting.
For KHNS News, this is Margaret Friednauer. Visit our news section online at khns.org. We're always open to your comments and appreciate hearing story ideas and topics important to you. You can reach us by emailing news@khns.org. Thanks for listening. We appreciate your support.
This is Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. The top five seafood trends in U.S. restaurants. You'll be surprised after this.
Fish Radio is brought to you by the At Sea Processors Association. The APA believes the best public policy is based on good science. Learn more at atsea.org.
Fish Radio is also brought to you by the Renewable Resources Coalition. RenewableResourcesCoalition.org. What a difference a decade makes. 10 years ago, the term wild was a negative for seafood, fresh frozen was still getting a bad rap, and fried seafood was the big favorite. That's no longer the case. The nation's top culinary development firm points to several emerging trends for seafood today. Aaron Novishin, president of the Culinary Edge in San Francisco, says one biggie is raw seafood beyond sushi.
Other raw or lightly cooked forms have really come come on, that being things like crudos and ceviches. And those are starting to spread down to the chains in more meaningful ways. So we're starting to see things like burger places serving ahi tuna burgers, and the tuna melt of today is actually seared raw ahi tuna with Munster cheese and things like that.
Novishin says another emerging trend, whole fish and shellfish.
Bone-in products, head-on shellfish, tableside boning out of fish, all that is really emerging right now.
Fish tacos have really taken hold.
Beyond just fish restaurants, they're in California Pizza Kitchen, and Taco Bell just announced a couple days ago they're doing their shrimp tacos. And so it's really permeated the entire industry.
Another trend gaining steam, whole pot. Seafood cooks.
A lot of the big chains like Joe's Crab Shack or Legal Seafoods are doing really great lobster bakes and big shellfish complete meal type of items.
Novishin says using sustainable seafood is an ongoing trend.
With so much transparency in existence today and people being able to dig in and find out information instantly about your restaurant and what you serve, people really need to be more upfront and honest with their consumers and more transparent.
That's Aaron Novishin of The Culinary Edge, thanks to the audio assist from Seafood Source News. Catch Fish Radio and more on Facebook. Fish Radio is also brought to you by Ocean Beauty Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.